This morning, in the first hour, we have a healthcare topic for you, something that we generally do twice a year, once in the summer, once in the winter. And we'll be talking about skin and skin care. And our guest is Dr. Ann Tice. She is a dermatologist from Carle Clinic. I'm sure that we'll be talking about the dangers of sun exposure and what you can do about that. And if people have questions about skin cancer, I'm sure she'll do her best to give an answer. But anything else that has to do with skin, I know also she will do her best to give you an answer. Whenever we have physicians on the program, I always give this little speech at the beginning. It goes something like this. Keep in mind that we can't do diagnosis over the phone. There are limitations to what we can do because the doctor can't see you. However, I don't want to discourage people from calling by saying that. Only I want to make sure you understand there's only so much that we could do. And then, obviously, if you have a real concern, then you need to pursue that with either Dr. Tice or another doctor, someone who actually can see you. But we do shows like this to try to help you answer questions and add to your store of health knowledge. So that's the deal. Give us a call. I know she'll do her best. 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very
Glad
much.
Glad to have you here. First, I guess since it is summer, we probably want to talk about sun. And now for years and years and years, of course, people have been hearing that prolonged exposure to the sun will increase your risk of skin cancer. So you want to be thinking about that, using sunscreen. And it seems like that message has gotten through to people, say, over 30, but there seems still to be a concern about teenagers, younger people, and whether or not they are following the advice. And I think, in fact, just earlier, your professional group, the American Academy of Dermatology, put out a press release not very long ago about that. And particularly, they were concerned about tanning salons. So I'm sure you probably would want to say, don't do that. First of all, if you say nothing else, you probably wouldn't want to say, stay away from that kind of place.
Yeah, that's true. And it befuddles me how some of the places will continue to say how it's healthy and it's helping you get vitamin D and all that stuff. Unless you're an elderly person inside all the time in a nursing home, just a little bit, like 5 minutes of sun exposure is enough to get our vitamin D in. And also drinking things like milk that have added vitamin D is good. But the tanning salons that actually give you the ultraviolet light, I don't understand why people still go there. Sure, a tan looks nice, at least our community thinks so. But boy, with the incidence of skin cancer just spiraling, particularly in the last 10 to 20 years, it's frightening that we're adding to it in the winter too.
Yeah. Well, and so let's talk about using sunscreen, because I guess I also would have to admit that I'm kind of inconsistent about it. If I knew that I was going to be outside, it was a summertime, if I was going to be at the beach or something, I would say, well, sure. But if I was going to be working in the garden, if I'm just going out to mow the lawn and I'm wearing a T-shirt, I probably wouldn't think about putting on sunscreen. So I guess the question is, okay, what sort of sun exposure do you worry about? And every time you go out, if you're going to be out for a prolonged period of time doing stuff outside, would you say you really should put on sunscreen?
Really, you should. And the American Academy of Dermatology suggests that everyone, every day, use even a moisturizer containing an SPF of 15, which, no, we don't do that. I think a lot of the companies, Neutrogena, Oil of Olay, are two of them, and I think are pretty good companies. They're starting to make moisturizers with sunscreens built in, so it's a no-brainer. You can just do that. And women are going to accept that more than men. But yeah, I'm a berserk gardener, and I will try to remember to put on sunscreens, particularly April through October. But there are sometimes I go out to weed, and there's never one weed out there. there's always a batch of them, and I'll find myself out there for a lot longer than I thought. I did years ago buy one of these sun protective shirts, so now that's a nice compromise. I toss that on; it's not hot, and then I don't have to worry about putting slime on my arms. I usually try to put sunscreen on my face every morning and neck, because we do get a lot of sun just running in and out of the car. We're not even thinking about it, going to the grocery store. So if you think about something like that, and I gave a talk to some gardeners a couple weeks ago. One of the gentlemen said that I'm not going to remember the store. I can't remember if it's Farm and Fleet or one of those types of stores actually was advertising shirts in stock that were around $30 or $35 that have an SPF or a sun protection factor of 30. So you can go out and grab one instead of the one I bought from the catalog about 5 years ago, $76. That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a nice shirt, and it's lasted through raspberry picking and all that, but that's a lot of money.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And if you were going to go out and you're going to look for a sunscreen,
yeah,
you're going down to wherever you buy these kind of things, I'm sure you'll go into that aisle, and they will be a very wide range
millions.
Of choice. Millions.
It's millions. Overwhelming.
So how do you decide which one of these things would be good for you?
Well, most of us by nature do not put on the amount that we should. So I'm telling most people, unless they have very deeply complected skin, I would suggest they use a 20 SPF and up. And I'll tell you the names of my two current favorites, the one I use and the one my college sons will use. Now, that's a real test if you can get a college kid to use it. This is great. I haven't forgetting mix for years. My favorite sunscreen now, and the patients brought this in and told me about it, is Neutrogena Ultra Sheer. And that has either an SPF of 30 or 45. I've seen a lot of local drugstores carry it. In little words underneath it is another subtitle. Besides Neutrogena Ultra Sheer, it says Dry Touch. And what it is, yes, it's a cream. And my husband thought, oh, a cream, it's going to go on, it's going to be slimy and goopy. No, when it dries, your skin actually feels real smooth. Mm. And it's nice feeling on the skin. It doesn't feel tacky and disgusting. And the one that my college sons like the best is by Coppertone. It comes in a kind of a blue spray-on bottle. It's Coppertone spray-on, and it comes in a 30. And they like the idea of being able to spray it on. Of course, don't spray it directly into your eyes, but on your hands first. Yeah. But those are my top two choices right now, and I'm very happy with them. In the past, the chemicals that make up sunscreens are greasy by nature, so it was really hard to formulate something that didn't feel disgusting when you put it on.
And just maybe one more thing. Mm-hmm. I have a caller here. I promise I will get to this person. But we were talking before we started that just this morning, in fact, I was chatting with someone who said that they had been trying to do the right thing and they were going to be outside and they put on sunscreen and they had an allergic reaction. They broke out in little red bumps, allergic reaction to the sunscreen.
Right. Yeah, that's totally obnoxious. I have that also. And, you know, here I am a dermatologist. I'm allergic to three of the main chemicals for sunscreens, which makes shopping for sunscreens completely annoying. I guess I'm lucky because I only get the rash on my face. I can use anything I want on my arms. There is a difference in sensitivity of different areas of skin. But the ones that say for sensitive skin, like Neutrogena has one for sensitive skin, the ones that are zinc oxide based are better for those that are allergic. The main ingredient most people get allergic to is called oxybenzone, OXYBENZONE, and that is a cousin of PABA. Almost everything does not have PABA in it now, but oxybenzone is the one that gives most of the allergic reactions. Unfortunately, with some of these zinc oxide-based things, you put it on, you look dead because it's whitish, and it's not very complimentary. But there are a lot of other brands besides that one. I finally found one that has a microfine zinc oxide, and the brand name of that is the ingredient is Z coat, capital Z and then a slash COTE. That's a zinc oxide that's microfine, and it's not nearly as stupid looking when you put it on. So if you find a product with Z coat in it, that'd be a good one.
Okay. Ann Tice is our guest. She's a dermatologist from Carl Clinic. If you have questions about this business we're talking about here, sunscreens, skin exposure, or anything else that has to do with skin, you can call us, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And now we have several callers ready to go. We will start with Champagne and line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. A few questions and just another remark on the Neutrogena Ultra Sheer. My husband loves it, and he just can't believe that he finally found something that works so well without the greasy feel, without looking white as a sheet after he puts it on. So it's been really great for him. But I have a question about when to start using sunscreens on babies and what kind to use, especially with the summer months coming up and, you know, taking baby out and all. What are some of the recommended guidelines there? And then the other kind of related question, during the pregnancy, I have developed skin tags and just wondered what is the latest as far as dealing with these things. There are different parts of my body, under my arms, around my neck, things like that. So just wondered about both of those. And I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
So far as babies go, we recommend that babies, number one, until 6 months of age, are not exposed to the sun. Babies should not become tanned. You want to keep them out of the sun, keep them under umbrellas and all of that. Their skin is a little bit thinner and could possibly absorb things a bit easier. So the first thing they say is you're not supposed to expose little kids, tiny babies, to the sun. After 6 months of age, though, there are some companies like Coppertone that will have water babies and some of those that are supposed to be great for putting on kids. Now, a while ago, Presun was advertising a product that for children, which was exactly the same thing as they're advertising to the adults. There wasn't very much difference in that. I would think something in the Neutrogena range or Coppertone, any of those would be fine after 6 months of age. But under that age, you want to protect them. Clothing, hats, umbrellas, not expose them. And so far as your other comment about the skin tags, yes, those are incredibly annoying. You do grow more with pregnancy. Men and women can get them, and you don't have to be pregnant to get them. Their favorite locations are the folds of the body, around the neck, the armpits, and the groin area. Very annoying. Clothing, necklaces will rub on them. There's no magic to make them go away. They, in a physician's office, can be snipped off, which sounds all barbaric, but actually hurts less than if you poke them with a needle, or lightly cauterized. But there isn't any magic cream, and I don't usually recommend grandma's technique of tying a string around them. Sometimes that gets into trouble.
Mm, okay. But it sounds like removing them really isn't a big
deal. Oh, it's
deal.
Easy.
And you would not have to go to a dermatologist. Would a family physician?
A family physician should be able to do it, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. And if there's a really big skin tag that's quite fleshy, it's nice to do a local anesthesia on that because they might bleed a little squeak afterwards. But most of them are pretty easy, and you can do it without anesthesia.
Okay. Line two next. This caller is in Urbana.
Yeah. Regarding sun damage, the lip, below the lip, sort of on the chin where it gets puffy. In my case, it sort of developed over time, wasn't paying a lot of attention, I guess. One of the methods in terms of freezing, I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. But it doesn't seem that it sort of certainly returns or never really fully works. Is there any other alternative?
Well, has someone diagnosed this as being like a precancerous area that they've frozen? Or I'm trying to think of what you mean by puffy. Many of the precancerous areas are red and rough areas. Or on the lip, it'll be whitish spots or rough areas.
Well, it's actually across an area. Okay, let's put it another way. Is there any way of getting rid of that or not?
Okay, I can't see you, so I can't diagnose it. But, I have all sorts of sun damage on my arms because I was a lifeguard. I was baked potato as a kid, even though I used whatever CNSki they had. And my arms are tan. They remain that way all year. They have white spots in them and freckles in them. And if I hold my hand up to it, the palm of my hand is what God gave me. And then I show it against my arm, and that's what I've done to myself as a teenager. Well, you get most of your rays before you're 18, incidentally. That is just sun damage. I can't change that. But I'm wondering if you've had something frozen, that maybe it's a precancerous area. Those are typically pink or tan and rough, although as I mentioned on the lip, it may be a white patch. If you let those go over a long time, a few of them may turn into skin cancer. That's probably why someone tried to freeze those with liquid nitrogen.
Right.
And some people have a lot of those, and you think, oh gosh, I froze this area. And you clear up that, and then all the neighbors, the surrounding skin, will respond with a similar thing. There are some creams that can be used that can be applied to a much wider area if isolated freezing with liquid nitrogen does not work. Those creams are real annoying to use, though, because every area that's sun damaged will soak that medicine up and become red and irritated and maybe scabby. So you don't want to be doing that before your cousin's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an excellent treatment. There are quite a few brand names out there now.
Okay. Is that a prescription then?
Yeah, they're all prescription. The one I will often use is called Floroplex, Florplex. But it's twice a day for 2 to 3 weeks, and you kind of want to be out of public view if you have a lot of precancerous areas because it'll show them all.
Now, I do use sunscreen.
Great.
That certainly would help putting it on there too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've had some Australian studies a number of years back that if you are very, I mean, even if you already have a whole bunch of precancerous areas, but then you start wearing a hat, start using sunscreen, mm-hmm. once in a while, a couple of those precancerous areas will go away. I mean, I wouldn't count on only that, but
yeah. That's another thing. I bought, you know, in terms of a brand name, Tilly Hat, which is
oh, yeah.
very interesting.
Good for you.
But you have to watch. Occasionally, you forget it at the restaurant. You know, you have to run back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and they're not cheap either.
Well, yeah. Well, this I got it for 40. The interesting thing with now is that they give you a 2-year warranty, that no matter what reason that you lose it, you know, you lose it, it was stolen, whatever, they give you another one for half price.
Good deal.
So okay, thank you very much.
Never too late to start with sunscreens.
Thank you.
Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Dr. Ann Tice. She's a dermatologist, and we're talking about skin and skin care. And if you have questions, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Real quick, let me ask you again one more sunscreen thing. How frequently should you reapply?
Well, the usual recommendations if you're swimming or sweating a lot, every 2 hours. Now, how many of us do that? Not too many. I mean, I'm realistic about this. That's why I say go for a higher number. I use a 45. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Next caller is in Urbana and line 3. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a very specific question. I am a blonde, blue-eyed person who's going to be going to Aruba next week. And I'm wondering if you have any more specific recommendations as far as I tend to use SPF 50 with titanium dioxide just normally.
That's great.
But that's going to be a little bit more sun intense down there.
It certainly is. And I'm light complected, but my two sons are the proverbial blonde, blue-eyed. And when we would travel with them to Florida, you just can't be out all day. I mean, you will get burned, even if you're doing everything I told you to.
Mm-hmm.
So we would try to enjoy walks on the beach and running around before 10 and then go out after 3 or so.
Okay.
Swimming pools aren't as crowded after 3 o'clock. That's nice.
Yeah.
But I know one time I was traveling with that southern sun, or you get closer to the equator, it's a whole lot different ballgame than central Illinois.
Yeah.
I had put goop all over my legs, and we were on some cruise. It was like dinner cruise, 5 o'clock. My legs got fried. I was sitting up against the side of the boat, and just my legs were exposed, and I was shocked. I mean, it's different there. You cannot be out as much, unfortunately.
Yeah, I sort of figured avoiding between, they recommend like 11 to 2:30, I think is what
right.
I had read. But
those are the peak hours. Go inside or, you know, or sit in one of those cabanas with a fabulous lunch.
Well, I also wondered about, the chance of being on the beach, even, kind of in the shade.
The beach is a little tricky, and concrete around pools, because there is a lot of reflection off the sand. They will reflect the light back up, even though you're under an umbrella. So please do that. Oh, here's another thing. That moms, after their kids are, this is a little bit getting off the point, but after their kids are sunburned, they toss a T-shirt on them and put them back in the pool the next day. Don't do that. You need to put sunscreen on underneath.
Okay.
Because a wet sun or a wet T-shirt has an SPF of 2. Yeah.
So it's not doing anything for you, really.
Yeah. And so there are some heavier T-shirts. There's a product that came out a couple years ago called SunGuard mm-hmm. by the Ritt Dye Company. It's just hard as the dickens to find. But you dump it in your wash load, and it makes anything you wash have an SPF of 30. And
oh,
it doesn't seem to mess it up. But I've been really frustrated. Hancock Fabric used to have it. I don't know if they have it this year.
Okay.
Hard to find.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. And let's go to Kankakee. We have a couple of people here there in Kankakee, starting with line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a specific question. I noticed on CNN News last week, they were talking about a product that's available in Europe and Canada and Mexico. It's not available here for some reason. And it has a 99.8% UV reduction rate. And it's been available without a prescription over the counter all over Europe and for some quite time now. And I was wondering why it wouldn't be available here in the States. And since it is now being sold on the black market here in the States, they did show that too.
They tell you what the name of that is? Because I'm not familiar with that.
It's such a technical name. It was a long word, yeah.
Oh, I apologize because I don't know about that.
It sure was selling. It was selling for up to $45 a package.
Wow.
And I guess it really works because it's 99.9%.
Well, I'd like to try that.
Yeah, well, I was just curious why that wouldn't be available to
Maybe they'll talk about it at our summer academy meeting, but I have to apologize because I don't know about that. I do know about some other things with the FDA. FDA has their hands full testing out a whole bunch of medicines. They only meet every now and then, and then they look at all of them, and they want to make sure research is thorough with it. They've had something for nail fungus in Europe for many years that's more effective than the one that was approved here. And I don't understand what gets through and what doesn't get through sometimes.
I think it's just things
anyway. Yeah. I mean, I've had some patients that they travel in Europe, and I know with this one, it's a paint-on nail thing. It works a heck of a lot better than the one that we finally got for by prescription here, and it took us 8 years to get that one. So
yeah.
I don't know all of that.
Well, maybe we can keep everybody informed. Maybe they can start pushing for some of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, anything. That
okay.
Sounds good to me.
Well, that's all I wanted was to bring that to your attention. And
sorry.
Public.
I'll
all
be right, watching well, for it, though.
You.
Thank you.
Well, what is the highest SPF on a sunscreen you can get?
50, I think.
And,
yeah.
And
there's arguments about that for years. They keep saying, well, for a while, oh, I don't know, 10 years ago, they were saying, oh, we're going to make the highest number be 30, and nobody can ever claim over 30, but there are a few that have a 50 or a 45. And then my patient was kidding me, oh, if it's a 60, does a blanket spring out and go over your head? No.
Well, and I'm sure that a lot of people look at those numbers and they know that the higher the number, the greater the level of protection. But
mm-hmm.
But what exactly does that number mean?
Well, it isn't like it's not really additive. Like, so if you have an SPF of 5 and then you try an SPF of 10, it doesn't mean it's twice as effective. It's a logarithmic curve. So the 15 will protect you a lot, the 20 some more, and the 35 or 40 more than that. But it's not like it's going up by big jumps. A 15 to a 30 is double the amount. So it's hard to understand. You know, and then you want to try to find something that's waterproof. Doggone it, those ones with the zinc oxide in them, a lot of those are not waterproof. So the sensitive skin ones are going to wash off and sweat off easier. So that's another reason to reapply, I guess.
Okay. Back to the phones here. And our next caller is also in Kankakee. This is line one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there such a thing as a sweat-proof sunscreen, or is that just...
They're trying to make those, and a couple years ago there was an Active or Sport in the on the brand name. Coppertone was having one. There was a Pre-Sun Active. That one's hard to find. I can't see that anymore. But Coppertone Sport was trying to say that it was sweat-proof and not run into your eyes. The, another thing that you can do to help is if you can apply it 30 minutes before you go outside, it tends to bond, and before you're sweating, it tends to bond to the skin better and stay put better for those people that are bikers or tennis players and they're sweating a lot. But that's always been a problem with the sweat bringing it into the eyes, too. That's the closest you can get, if something that says Sport or Active.
Any name brands that you can think of?
Well, the last one I remember seeing, and I think marketing-wise, they just change the labels every couple years, was the Coppertone Sport. Now, I don't know if they're still carrying that one or not. I've gone with the Coppertone spray on. But they'll eliminate a product and put a different name on it, so we want to buy that one.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And that would be something, if they're claiming that that product has that feature, you would think it would be prominently displayed on the label. So
yeah.
You could read the labels and see
what
they're
saying. A lot of
times
on the labels they'll have something. They'll say sweat-proof or waterproof. I would go for one of those, but... Boy, they're far from perfect still.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Next caller is in Chicago. Line two. Hello.
Hello. I was calling with a story from my own experience that actually where the sun actually helped the skin. And I was just wondering if you might have heard anything like it. It was many years ago. I had a couple warts on my hand, and I went to a doctor, and, he burned them off, as I guess the typical procedure is. But for some reason, I ended up getting about 20 other warts and started popping up on my hand. And I said, well, boy, what am I going to do now? But it just happened that I had a job where I was driving at the time, and I had a change in my route where the sun, my hand was exposed. You know how you were driving? Sometimes your other hand is exposed to the sun and maybe mm-hmm. hanging out the window or something. And it happened to be exposed to sunlight for, a period of time every day, at least a half hour every day. And gradually, thank God, gradually this sun or the ultraviolet, just gradually, for some reason, the warts started vanishing. And I'm, you know, I guess it was the ultraviolet from the sun or not. And I'm just wondering if you ever heard anything like that where the sun actually helped a condition. I thought I was getting skin cancer or something like that.
Well, I haven't heard of that with viruses, but the word virus is just a real sneaky Pete. It's a stupid virus, and it's really hard to get rid of. And all our barbaric methods, well, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Occasionally what will happen is if you've irritated the wart by any way, and that could be, there's one guy in Cleveland just sticks adhesive tape over warts, and he writes on it, Dr. So-and-so's special wart tape first. And believe it or not, sometimes they'll go away. But any irritation can make the body mount an immune reaction to the wart virus and then kick in your own natural abilities to try to get rid of it. I've had people go down to Florida, and it wasn't the sun because they had warts in the bottom of their feet, running along the beach, and they got their feet a little bit irritated with the sand, and it helped their warts go away. I don't know why it did that. I thought I should run a study for that and go to Florida and watch. But, you know, sometimes I don't know if it was a liquid nitrogen or if it's just your body decided that's enough of that. This is not normal, and mount your own immune system reaction to it, and then it'll help them go away.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks. I think that as I'd had it explained to me, the thing about the wart virus is that it's so benign that your body sort of doesn't care. But then if you alert your immune system to the fact that it's there, then the body will say, oh, okay, well, we'll get rid of
that. That's not supposed to be
there.
That's
not supposed to be there. It's okay. But otherwise, it seems like it's not. Your body says, eh.
Well, people have different amounts of reactivity to it. Like, I have a brother that has warts all the time. I can touch them every day, and I don't get them. I mean, I did when I was a kid. A lot of times as we get older, we develop more immune response to it. And there's a new cream out that is kind of fun that is called an immune modulator cream. It makes the body recognize if something's not right there. It's been used mostly for warts, but now it was recently approved for precancerous changes. So it helps the body identify this is a virus, it's not right, or these are precancerous changes, it's not right, and mount your own immune reaction to it. It's kind of neat. They've even used it on some basal cell skin cancers.
And this is something, though, you have to have prescription for.
Yeah, it's a prescription, but, I mean, boy, that's the way to go instead of having, you know, big surgery or nasty thing done.
All right. We've got some other callers here. Our guest is Dr. Ann Tice. She is a dermatologist from Carl Clinic in Urbana, and we're talking about skin care. If you have questions, give us a call. She'll do her best, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Urbana, the next caller, line 3.
Hi, hello. I'm just calling on behalf of my wife, who actually can't be by the phone right now. And this is not a question about the sun. It's a dermatological thing, but it's not about the sun. For about 10 years now, she's had kind of medium but certainly noticeable acne, mostly on her face, also maybe a little on the chest and on the shoulders. And I was just wondering if you could recommend any if you could kind of recommend a daily, maybe morning and night kind of washing regimen that might combat this. Seems like a lot of the products out there dry the skin quite badly and are maybe more aimed at, like, teenagers with oily skin. I mean, we're both in our, like, 20s now, and it seems like maybe a slightly different approach might be needed. And the other part of the question is, could you talk a little bit about maybe the risks and benefits of microdermabrasion procedures, and also I think there's a laser treatment that you can get for kind of scarring and stuff like that?
Okay, sure.
Those are the two questions. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, I'll try to go through those. If she's in her late 20s, yes, our skin does get more sensitive. So usually I have about the only thing that's very good over-the-counter is a benzoyl peroxide combination, and that gets a little tougher to take after you're 22 and up. There are some more gentle cleansers that are benzoyl peroxide cleansers that are available without a prescription, but most of the more gentle things to treat acne are going to be prescription. Panoxyl soap, P-A-N-O-X-Y-L. You almost have to ask for it at the pharmacies. It comes in a 5 or 10%. Don't get the 10%. It irritates a lot more. But that could be used in the shower in a 5%. I would definitely use a moisturizer afterwards. The brand name I happen to like is Cetaphil, C-E-T-A-P-H-I-L, lotion. They have one specially for the face, but you could use the body lotion anywhere, including the face. That won't block the pores and hopefully won't make her any drier. But if the benzoyl peroxides are just, if even those are too drying, and they do have some that you can leave on overnight, but you have to be careful because it's going to bleach your sheets and your pillowcases and such, then we're talking about prescription ones. And there's quite a variety of ones that are not very irritating. Another thing to consider in a woman, if this is a new onset of acne, is anything hormonally going on. A couple of birth control pills actually have some benefit for acne in addition to working as a good contraception, so you could ask her gynecologist about that too. Microdermabrasion, I guess, in a way, is like mini sandblasting of the skin. I mean, that sounds all strange, but it is. It's fine particles aimed at the skin, and it will slough off kind of the extra skin cells and make the skin feel a lot smoother afterwards. And a lot of people think that's quite fun to have. I think it's pleasant enough. I'm not sure it's doing any deep treatment. I'm not convinced so far that it's changing wrinkles, but it'll make your skin feel very soft, almost like you've been exfoliated afterwards. And there's other ways to do that too. I am not really convinced myself that helps scarring to any extent. The laser abrasion, laser treatment for scarring, can. A laser is a very precisely controlled wound to the skin, so you can go down, you know, at a controlled level and be able to smooth out some of those scarred areas, or at least try to make the surface of the skin a little bit more even so the scars are less noticeable. But that is quite a big step to take, and you want to find a good plastic surgeon for that. And usually if it's going to do enough to really help scars, then you probably want to be out of the public eye for a week and a half or two afterwards.
Hmm. All right. Let's go next to Charleston, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question. Last summer I had gotten a couple insect bites, and they didn't heal. And I went to a dermatologist, and he indicated it was dermofibroma.
Dermatofibroma, yeah.
And froze it with liquid nitrogen, which didn't do any good. And what I understand, there's really not much you can do with that, or is there something that can be done with it if you really want it? I am itching it all the time, especially one by my ankle.
Mm-hmm. A dermatofibroma, derm is the first part of the word, which means skin, and fibroma means a fibrous reaction. And what those are is we think they're a response to a trauma of some kind, a little pimple, a poke in the skin, an insect bite. It tends to be perhaps the more common one. They are more often on the arms and legs, but particularly the legs. And for some reason, instead of the body making a scab or a small, healing that small wound, it gets a little carried away, and it produces too much fibrous tissue, so you get a bump. They are benign. I, in my 22 years of practice, have not seen one ever turn into a cancer, but if you ever did have one of these, it's growing and rapidly changing. Yes, get it checked. But most of the time, dermatofibromas are frustrating, and people can get more than one. Usually, it's dermatofibromas. They just have a lump day. They don't tend to itch.
Okay. We have a couple of moles here. Hello.
But yeah, it's called a post-inflammatory pigmentary spot, or it could be pink or kind of brownish. Some of those will take 2 to 6 months to fade if it was a real whopper of a pimple, but that's a normal reaction.
Okay. And yeah. My other question is, I've seen different things over the counter about like sort of the dark, you know, no, I wouldn't say bags, sort of the dark spots underneath your eye, mm-hmm. underneath people's eyes that form. Is there anything short of seeing a dermatologist over the counter that can be done? Other than, I know my dermatologist has said, drink a lot of water, make sure you're hydrated. But, you know, my mom's told me, my grandmother, you know, put tea bags on your eyes for a little bit, try cucumbers. But I didn't know if there's anything over the counter that actually can help reduce those a little bit.
Well, two things. Some people have puffiness underneath their eyes, and if they're having like really salty foods, that's going to be much more accentuated in the morning. So avoiding really salty foods may help. As we get older, nature blesses us with many things, including sometimes people will get a little extra accumulation of fat underneath the lower eyelid, and it looks puffy. They can be skinny as rail, but have a little extra pad of fat there. Outside of surgery, nothing does anything for that. So that's the puffy eyes. The other thing is just the dark circles. A lot of times that can be genetic, and even though you have a good, healthy life, it may not change much with water and all that. The skin around the eyes will thin as we get older, allowing the blood vessels to show through. It becomes more translucent, so it becomes more noticeable. There was some really iffy stuff promoted by a doctor, a vitamin K cream, a number of years ago that a company called St. Ives, I-V-E-S, they have a product. I think it was in Walmart, St. Ives Under Eye Cream. Anyway, it has vitamin K in it, and Oh, this guy about 6 years ago was touting that for helping under eye circles. I have not ever had a patient come back and tell me it helped, so I'm a little worried about it. But it was being promoted, and I would take that with a definite grain of salt.
So I should probably just thank my mom and my dad then, if they, you know, if just for the dark circles.
No, you don't blame them. You blame ancestors that are not around.
Oh, okay.
This is always a good thing to blame it on someone else, but not anyone that can speak back.
Well, that's good. Well, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the call. On to Champagne. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. I got a maybe a little broader question for you. The whole increase in instance of skin cancers of various kinds, does skin color of the person have any effect here? I mean, is this primarily a problem for white people, or are people with lighter brown skins affected as much? Are people with dark brown or black skins affected very much? I never hear anybody talk about that, so I'm kind of curious exactly who or what kinds of skin colors this is really affecting most. And I'll just take the answer off air. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Absolutely, skin color makes a huge difference. The lighter the complexion a person has, the easier they sunburn, the more trouble they're going to have with the same amount of sun. So if you have my kids, the blonde and blue-eyed, they're setups for trouble. A red-haired, freckled-type person, that's probably the one most apt to get sun damage. Whereas if you have a Mediterranean person that doesn't sunburn very quickly, they will have less problem. But I can see skin cancers in any type of skin type. It is much less common in deeply complected people, such as darker-complected African-Americans. It can happen, but it's not as common. They have a natural protection against the rays of the sun. One of my partners just recently had an African-American person that had a melanoma on their foot. I mean, you wouldn't think foot or hands or lip would be that common either, but it can happen. But the majority are people that are out a lot, and the lighter the complexion they have, the more problems they can have.
Okay. We have about 15 minutes left on the program. Ann Tice is here. She's a dermatologist from Carl Clinic, and we'll just continue to take calls, as many as we can. The next caller up in line is somebody else also on a cell phone here, line three. Hello.
Yeah, hi. This is kind of a follow-up to that previous caller's question. Assuming one is light-complected and does have freckles and that sort of thing, is there kind of an average age that one might expect to see the first onset of melanoma?
Melanoma.
I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, sure.
Thanks.
There's three types of skin cancer. Melanoma is what they warn you about, a mole that's changing. Brown, black are the most common, although they can be many colors. That can happen at any age. I mean, there have been reports of infants 1 year of age having that, which is a terrible thing. It will be a little bit more common in young adults. No one has ever really understood that. So any age, be watching for that. The two most common skin cancers, which fortunately are quite easy to treat, usually surgery is 96% cure rate, are basal cell and squamous cell. And those, when I first started practice a long time ago, and I am old, I'd see it in people in their upper 60s and 70s. Well, now there are some people that I've taken multiple skin cancers off, basal cell skin cancers off them in their 30s. In Florida, they're reporting basal cell skin cancers in kids 16 and 17 because they live in Florida, they haven't worn sunscreen. So I think the ages are dropping. But I've seen it in some 20-year-olds also. So, and they all look a little bit different. The American Cancer Society has I assume they would have a good website. I know we get brochures from them, but you can try to look up skin cancer in the American Cancer Society and get some pictures of them, descriptions too.
So it's sort of a combination of what your skin type is, how much exposure to the sun you've had, and how early in your life did you get exposure.
Yeah. With melanomas, a curious thing associated with it is having a severe sunburn as a child. Well, that always makes me nuts because I don't know anybody of lighter complexion that hasn't had a bad sunburn as a child. Mm. An outdoor job as a teenager is another risk for melanoma. Having a large number of moles or a family history of melanoma is also a risk for having melanoma, which is the most serious type of skin cancer. But the other two can come on, I would, mostly 30s and up.
Next is Southern Illinois, line number four. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm sitting outside in the shade with my sunscreen on, waiting.
Good.
And I had a question about winter skin. In the wintertime, I get a flat, dry patch, like almost a circle, several of them around my waist. I know it's dry skin. And I think it's from irritation from my waistband rubbing, but I've tried every cream and
And those are not there in the summer?
No, they go away in the summertime.
Okay. Best guess would be something called numular, N-U-M-M-U-L-A-R. Numular means round or coin-shaped, mm-hmm. eczema. And it's very common in the wintertime. People get dry skin and kind of the dry weather, and even if you're trying to moisturize a lot, tips the balance a little bit, and they'll get these little nickel-dime patches that can be red and rough, or they just may be dry and flaky. Typically, outside of very gentle soaps such as Dove or Oil of Olay, and a good moisturizer like that Cetaphil lotion I mentioned earlier every day after showering, typically those will help. But over-the-counter, you might try some hydrocortisone ointment. Now, I said ointment, which is greasy like Vaseline, because that's a little bit better than some of the hydrocortisone creams.
Is that a prescription?
No, that one is not. It's mild, but that's an over-the-counter one you can try, hydrocortisone ointment. And your physician should be able to get you lots of good cortisone prescription creams, though, if that doesn't work.
Okay. Anything like, do you recommend cod liver oil or anything in the winter? Could it be a vitamin D deficiency? Or?
Most likely not, and no, I don't recommend that.
Do you recommend, like, diets for people with skin problems? Or?
No, they've looked into that a lot, and it didn't really make much difference. Of course, everyone, we want to have a balanced diet with fruits and vegetables, but diet doesn't tend to make much difference with dry skin.
All right. Well, thank you.
Quite welcome. Enjoy your day.
Thank you for the call. Next person in line is in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a quick question. You had mentioned a couple of name brands like Cetaphil and other things, but I tend to buy generic brands. Like, I use the generic Cetaphil cleanser, so I just wondered what your opinion was on generic forms of different brands.
Oh, most of those are fine. What I can't vouch for, depending upon which one you pick up, is whether or not it might aggravate somebody that has a little tendency for acne.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tend to recommend brand names like Oil of Olay and Neutrogena. It can be found in drugstores. Oh, I don't have any financial interest in any of this stuff instead.
No, yeah, I just wondered if there was a big difference between generic versus
if you don't have any specific allergies and if you don't have a tendency for acne, probably not too much. I will just make a general mention that the heavier a lotion is, then the better it is for really dry skin. So if you can pour it right out of the bottle, that's not going to be as good as one that's very thick. And the thick one isn't going to be as good as something that feels heavy and greasy. That's going to be more moisturizing if you're talking dry skin.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
To Danville, line number one. Hello.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question. I'm an older lady, 67, and I have those in my face, those whiteheads, not blackheads, but whiteheads. I don't know. It's probably not the right name.
No, that is close enough. If you wanted to be fancy, you could call them milia, M-I-L-I-A. That doesn't matter. Those are fairly common in people,
yeah.
And sometimes they are related to age. The most common area they like to be around is around the eyes and the cheeks and sometimes on the chin. We don't really understand why they form. Occasionally it may be related to past sun exposure, which never has made sense to me, but it's supposedly true. And you can't scrub them out. You almost have to go to someone that would open those and then press that little core out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't have a fix for not getting them, though, unfortunately.
Oh, you don't?
Well,
okay.
You got like a 5% chance that something like the Neutrogena anti-wrinkle cream, which has retinol in it, may help them come out a little bit easier. But I'm a little doubtful even that would make a difference.
Yeah, you said wrinkle cream?
Well, Neutrogena has one anti-wrinkle cream.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And the reason I'm bringing that up is because it has a product called retinol in it, which is a cousin of a prescription called Retin-A.
Yeah.
But even if you have the strong Retin-A prescription, it doesn't always help those.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank
you.
All right, thank you.
Enjoy your show. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye.
Let's go to Indiana for another caller here, line three. Hello.
Hello. Just what are skin tags? Are they just made up of the surface cells or other things going on?
They're just a little blip of normal skin.
Okay. And I remember when I first saw him, my stepfather, you know, I thought, my God, he's on his way out of here. And, you know, he lasted another 4 years. But I was wondering about him, and he had mentioned that that they occasionally dry, you know, his words were they would dry on the end and break off.
Hmm.
And I just wondered about that.
Well, okay, skin tags are soft, and they're typically crowded around the neck or the armpits. Those are the most common areas, and they just look like a little tag, like a little tiny blip there, and they don't get hard or crusty, and they don't usually have much of a dark color. I wonder if you're thinking more about another condition also common after 35 called a seborrheic keratosis, and those they're typically brown or tan. They can get rough, and occasionally if your fingernail hits them or a towel catches them, the top will peel off.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get really big, and sometimes unsightly, too. They can occur anywhere on the torso, scalp, anywhere in the whole body.
Well, I was told by a general practitioner that unless you're concerned about the looks or that they are, are rubbing someplace on the body, like on the thighs, there's no sense in doing anything about it unless you just want to have, surgeon go in and start cutting them out.
Right.
And I just wondered if that's still, I'm talking information I got, years ago from my stepfather, and I just wondered if that's still the same
skin tags
regimen now.
Yeah, I mean, if you know the diagnosis, skin tags and the other condition I mentioned, those rough brown spots, seborrheic keratosis, those are benign.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime you have something that's got a funny color or it's bleeding or it's got some brown tones in it and growing, ooh, have a double check to make sure we know it's benign.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, thanks for the call. Way back in the beginning, we started talking about sunscreens. You said, I think that you said, that you really liked sunscreens that had moisturizers.
That's a nice idea.
Some people did.
If you're using a moisturizer, it's nice to have that built in, so it's a little bit more convenient to remember.
I guess my question was, who needs moisturizer in the summer?
Not too many people.
It seems like, in the wintertime, I can see that. But I would think that in the summertime, it wouldn't be as much of a problem.
Well, still, there's people that have a tendency for a little bit drier skin, particularly if they're using a harsh soap, and they just have a habit of putting it on in the morning. And then that would be a nice combination. But, I would go with one of the lighter ones in the summer.
Yeah. We also talked about, back at the beginning of the program, the dangers of going to the tanning salon. And you mentioned, and of course, a lot of people think that's a good look to be tanned. There are cosmetic alternatives. Are there any that you think actually look good, will make you look like you're tan, but...
The sunless tanning lotions... Darn it, I just saw an ad for one that was a spray-on, and that looked kind of interesting. I mean, that you yourself sprayed on, but I can't remember the name. But if you're going to get a self-tanning lotion, that's certainly an acceptable change or thing that you can use. Try to get one that has a tint in it so you know where it's put on. And going to some of the salons where they spray the tan on you is great. The only downside of it is that for those of us over 45 that happen to have some of those rough spots I just talked to the last caller about, the spray-on stuff sticks in those more, so it accentuates them.
Well, I'll make them even darker.
I didn't know I had so many spots, so I tried a fake tanning thing. Darn.
Okay.
But a much better substitute than going outside and getting the tan.
Well, I remember they had some of these things when I was a kid, but they tended
orange.
To make you orange.
No, they much improved it, and a lot of them are not even stinky anymore.
Yeah, all right. Well, I thank you very much. We have one caller. My apologies we can't take, but I think we better leave it at that with our guest, Dr. Ann Tice. She is a dermatologist from Carl Clinic. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it.